Hi, you've tuned in to the Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure. My name is Emma Lovell, also known as Lovely, and I have a mission to visit every UN-recognised country in the world while raising awareness for mental health. Join me as we revisit some of my past adventures, speak to fellow travellers and interesting locals, all while following the journey to 195 countries. I'll be joined soon by my co-pilot, Darius, in Germany. And sometimes we're even going to hit the road together. Make sure to join in the adventure by following me on Instagram, Lovely Travels. You can also join our Facebook group, Lovely Travels Community, and learn more about us at the website, lovelytravels.com. But for now, it's listening time. Travel vicariously along with us.
Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of the Lovely Travels podcast. Emma, good morning, good afternoon and good evening, wherever you are, whatever time it is. Welcome to the show.
Namaste.
Namaste in bed.
You stole that from me. I told you that joke last time. It's so good. I want it on a shirt. It's so good. Namaste in bed. Namaste, which means the divinity in me recognizes namaste. The divinity in you. It also means
the divinity in you is awesome.
Well, thank you. Stop it.
You're welcome.
Why are we saying
Emma,
namaste?
Emma and your divinity? What are we talking? Well, everyone knows they clicked on the episode.
Not necessarily. Sometimes they roll on to the next one. So anyway, we're in India. We're going to India, finally. It's like this episode was or should have been one of the first ones, but we are finally off to India and we are joined by one of our lovely listeners, big fan, Anoush. So he actually was a guest on the Thoughtful Travel podcast, and I was also a guest at some point on the Thoughtful Travel podcast by Amanda Kendall. And then he got on to our little show. And
Anuj is just making the rounds of podcasts, and good on him. Thanks for listening, mate. Welcome to your own episode.
It's very exciting. Well, I really wanted to talk to someone who was a local, but Anuj has a great story in that he also came to Australia 16 years ago. So he has that different perspective of going back to India, and he was quite blown away by the fact that I had been to India 11 times.
Wow.
Yeah, which is a lot, especially for India. He's like, I've heard of people going like twice. I don't like, that's kind of crazy. And I'm like, yeah, I just love it. And so we just had a really lovely chat about, you know, what it's like to live away from India, what it's like going back, some of the places we've visited. And he did a really cool thing where he went with his father and they put together like a list of all the places that they'd visited and then shared it with me. And then I cross-checked and referenced where I'd been and just kind of like a fun, I added some more and it's like, you know, there's obviously plenty more as well, but just cool to be like, where have we been? Where do we want to go? And he said he, you know, feels quite inspired to see more of his own country when someone like myself likes to visit so much.
Just a couple of nerds bonding over spreadsheets.
I do love me a spreadsheet. and I do love, and it's about India. I love it even more.
Who doesn't like spreadsheets, honestly?
Get out.
Organize yourselves. Organize your information. Before we go on a tangent about spreadsheets, Where can people reach out to Anuj?
We'll check his Instagram up, but, you know, because, like, you know, there's no sort of businessy element to this. It's just, you know,
just a
good old chat. On Instagram is at AnujPH, so AnujPH. And you can see some of his travels around the world. But yeah, it was really nice that he said, like, he's been to over 25 countries, but he's really keen to see more of India in the future, especially after COVID, go home and get to see more of his own country and really get to know it again, which was very humbling for me. Yeah. because I love their country. So, and, you know, India can be a bit overwhelming, so some people put it on back burner and say maybe one day and all that. I really encourage people to get to India ASAP. Don't wait till you're in your 60s and, you know, you've been everywhere else, but, like, go now and while you're agile and fit and open-minded and...
Is this yoga related, this advice?
No, it's just, no, like, honestly, like, people go to places like in Rajasthan where there's all these, like, temples and palaces and beautiful monuments and things like
Sounds
that.
Like
and
steps.
There's a lot of steps. And yeah. They go there in their, like, in their 60s or 70s, finally. And then it's really hot, and India's pretty, like, can be quite intense. And so if you're, you know, later in life, you're probably a little bit stuck in your ways. No offense, sometimes. You're a bit stuck in your ways, and so maybe less open-minded and less tolerant. So perhaps sometimes it's easier to go earlier. And just don't wait, guys. Like, it's such an amazing place, and there's so much to see. It's phenomenal. I cannot sell it more, and I would sell it even more because you could travel with me in the future through the company I partner with, Take Me to India.
What a segue. I'm astounded. Take Me to India. What is Take Me to India, and what does it do?
Take Me to India is a travel company. They do luxury, boutique, bespoke travel. So basically we'll make an itinerary to suit you. It will be comfortable, it will be beautiful, and you will be absolutely 100% taken care of. And it's a great first time to India experience. We will put things in the itinerary that you would never have even imagined were possible. So
elephants?
Elephants can be in the itinerary. Tigers can be in the itinerary. Palaces can be in the itinerary. Backwaters on boat, like staying on a houseboat, spending time in the tea plantations, heading to the mountains, doing yoga, whatever you want, we'll do it.
Sounds great. All right, I'll take two.
So, yeah, takemetoindia.in is our website, Take Me to India on Instagram, Take Me to India on Facebook. And, yes, I'm a travel specialist with Take Me to India, so I would very much love to plan your trip in the future.
Sounds fantastic. Now let's dive into the chat between you and Anuj and see where that takes us.
Yes, this is the first of many India episodes, so enjoy.
Namaste.
Namaste. Namaste. Welcome to the Lovely Travels podcast. Anuj, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Emma, for inviting me. It's been my pleasure to be invited here.
Aap kaise hai?
Oh, main theek hu. I'm really well. Thank you.
I just asked how he was. I speak Tora Hindi, which is very, very helpful when I'm traveling there in India. So now you are Indian, but you're living in Australia. So tell me a little bit more about how you came to be here.
So it's very common for Indians to go out and go for higher studies. It's very, very common. So I came to Australia for higher studies, and I particularly chose Melbourne because I love sport so much. And so I came to Australia and I studied a couple of years and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I decided, okay, I'm going to try for permanent residency. And then I got it and I'm still here 16 years later.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And so where in India are you originally from?
So I am from Ahmedabad, city of Ahmedabad in state of Gujarat in India, which is a west part of India. I've never moved from Ahmedabad anywhere, so I haven't lived in different places like a lot of people do. So, that's it.
And the family is still there? The majority of your family is from there?
My parents are there only at this point of time. Yeah, my sister lives in USA now.
Which is also quite common.
So,
the family, the children go away. And then how often do you go back to India?
Oh, I try to go as much as I can, but lately I've only been once in the last 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. it's hard, obviously hard this year. I wanted to go this year, but my parents and my wife's parents always visit us all the time. So we sort of don't miss out on meeting them.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So they, how do they find coming to Australia?
Oh, both the sides of the family love it. Like my dad actually wants to move here, but it's like, it's very impossible at this point of time. And yeah, my dad loves it. My mom loves it. Australia has been great for me and my wife. And they just are so happy that we are in Australia. They love it.
And so did you meet your wife here in Australia? Was it a love match or arranged marriage? May I ask?
I didn't meet her here. It is sort of a match, but so you can say that we were introduced as a potential partners.
Yes.
So it wasn't like we were friends and we fell for each other. It was introduced as it, but it wasn't by my parents. Mm-hmm. So it's different. And yeah, it's, I can safely say we matched. But we've grown together and we sort of became the opposite now. So so that's good.
Yeah, I really... it's very interesting for a Western person. I think when we hear about arranged marriage, and there are some still arranged marriages that are not very nicely done, probably more in the villages and things like that, where it is quite that more traditional way and they're literally meeting on the day at the altar type thing. But now a lot of young couples or young people are requesting that their families help them and they still want the arranged, we'll put it in inverted commas, but it's a match, isn't it? It's the you know, the families, and it makes sense. You used to not understand it, but you know, it makes sense that you would marry somebody who's of a similar life background, who has similar religion, who, you know, because those things can really make a big difference in a marriage.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like how can I say, for us it was not the same background, the same, you know, she's from a different city. So that's sort of an adjustment. But when we were in, like, for, I can say for myself, when we were introduced as a potential partners, we fell for each other immediately, right? Aww. But I cannot say that, oh yeah, we met and then fell. So we were introduced that way. And a lot of the people that I know actually do it nowadays like that. So we maybe call it arranged marriage, but it's sort of never is an arranged marriage, because a lot of the times, you get introduced as a potential match, but then it's up to the husband and the persons to decide if they want to go ahead with it. And nowadays, a lot of the younger are sort of looking out like that. Oh yeah, you got to find through your family or So that's very interesting. And I haven't been back for so long. Like, I don't know what happens right now, to be honest. Things must have changed dramatically, I think, especially after what's happening this year.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah. It was a great show on Netflix I watched, and it was about arranged marriages and about a matchmaker in India.
Oh, yeah, I think Indian matchmaker.
It was really great. I really recommend people watching it because it gave the insight and the understanding that it's kind of like a Tinder. It's like a Tinder, but with the help of someone nowadays, you know, but you have some more help or family support and, you know, that the people want it. It's not forced. I think that's the misunderstanding. So, but different situation. There's a billion people, 1.3 billion people in India. So there's very different situations and different, I mean, the crazy thing in India is that you almost have, each state has its own culture, food, language, dress, customs. You know, you can, if you go from the north, south, east, west, it's, you can really experience something so different. And I think most of the culture we see in Australia and the food we certainly get, you probably see the North Indian food we mostly get. So from around the Delhi sort of Chandigarh, like that. Punjabi sort of style is the culture of India that we know. But yeah, there's so much diversity, isn't there?
And I absolutely agree. So my, like, the friends group, like my Indian friends, we always call India as like Europe without borders. So it's pretty much different countries. Like, each state is unique by itself and it has different history, culture, everything. And it's due to various historical reasons, like the kings that ruled India, like way back 3,000-4,000 years ago. And it just gone all the way to British, you know, rule. And it sort of defined how everything, every pocket of India is. And yeah, so it's mini Europe in a way, but with more people.
Many, many more people. But like, yes, if you guys go to the south, like Kerala, or then you go over the other side to Chennai, like, you know, you got like in Tamil, like you wouldn't be able to understand. It's completely different language.
Yeah. And some of my Tamil friends actually tried to teach us Tamil and there was no way. Like, I think Spanish would be easier to learn than Tamil would be.
Yeah, and they have, like, you have Bollywood, they have Tamilwood, don't they?
I think Tollywood.
Dollywood. Yeah, so they have their own, because they don't want to, they don't understand the Hindi movies, so they have the Tamil language and, you know, the dance is different and the dress is different. And I have to say my favorite food is South Indian food for breakfast.
Yeah, dosa, idli.
Idli, vada, dosa, sambar, chutney.
Yeah. You will get it everywhere and that's amazing.
It's so, my husband, when I took him in 2017 for the first time, in the morning we went and we had the dosa and we had the big like cone one. So, you know, it's shaped like a cone. And then it's funny because we came back to Australia and one time we went out and we had dosa and he was like, this isn't dosa. And I was like, what? It is dosa. And he's like, no, this isn't dosa. It's not a big cone. And I said, oh, sweetie, you know, they come wrapped different sometimes. He just got like the full experience. And he sometimes says to me, even now, 3 years later, he's like, oh, can we just go back to India? I really feel like dosa. That's a very long way.
Melbourne and we can make you one, the phone one.
And home food is the best. So you tell me, what are your favorite foods? What are you sort of making at home?
Oh, I cannot cook like any, I burn things. So, or burn vessels or destroy a lot of things. So my wife is an amazing cook. She cooks, well, obviously, primarily we are from Gujarat, so she would be cooking that food, like our home food. But she cooks really well Punjabi food as well. And obviously, South Indian is a norm in like where I come from. So you would have once a week, like at least my house would be once a week, my mom would make idli. And so it sort of kept going that way. And my wife also makes once a week South Indian food. So we always eat it. And, you know, my biggest problem at this point of time is how do I keep my weight away? She's so good food and, you know, we're restricted. We can't go do much.
Yes.
And I put on a few kilos because amazing food that I get all the time.
So, yeah. So good. I love going, you know, when I'm back in India, it's just the food is phenomenal and especially home cooked. It's so, and they always ask me what I like and I say paratha. And so people always know I like paratha. And then, you know, but I was at one house and auntie made like five. And these are like, so what they are is a stuffed bread. It's like, sort of a, looks like a pancake almost for Western stuffed bread. So it's like a roti with inside would be cauliflower or potato or like you can put any vegetable and it's all spiced. And then you have it with some curd and, but you know, it's like having a, she made them like a stack of pancakes. I'm like, auntie, I'm going to have like one or two. And she's like, please eat. You know, and I have to learn this. I have to stop telling people what I like because then the next day they make all the food for me and then they want to watch you eat all the food.
Yeah. And in India, it's a norm to just serve your guests as much as you can. And so if you are staying with someone in their house, they'll feed you like crazy. So you got to start saying no. It's otherwise you will be like fed so much.
It's the Atithi Deva Bhava, guest is
God. Yeah, that's exactly, right.
I have it written on my arm. So I have a tattoo. I'll put a photo up on the podcast. Yeah, I got it. I was there in 2012 and, you know, I'd been many times before, but this one day I was talking to this man and he said, Atithi Deva Bhava. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, it means guest is God. And I just, it like, oh, my whole like heart just filled up. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is exactly India. They treat the guest as if they are God. There's so much welcoming and hospitality. It's why I love India. So I ran over and I told Uncle, my really good friend and my colleague, I work with them now sometimes. And I said, Uncle, you know, Atithi Deva Bhava, why do I not know this? He said, oh, I was thinking of that yesterday. I was going to say that to you. He's like, yeah, that's, you know, unspoken motto of India, especially tourism motto. And then that night we went to the hotel for a function and on the wall was written, on the hotel wall was written Atithi Deva Bhava. I was like, oh my God, like that's three times in one day. So I thought that's something special and I want to keep it forever. And then last year I got it on my arm. So.
Oh, that's amazing.
Absolutely. I asked a friend over there and I said, is it okay? Like, is it sacrilegious or is it offensive or anything like that? And he's like, no, it's just a bit lame. And I was like, shut up. He's very modern. He's like, oh, that's lame. And I was like, shut up.
Maybe it is. But if you get it, you won't have a problem. If I get it, that is lame. So. No,
and when I'm there now, like the next time I went, when I showed people, they were like, what? So I said, yeah, for me, India doesn't, you don't visit India, you like sense India. Like when you smell it, you see it, you feel it, like it gets under your skin.
We
talked a little bit before, you know, people can be a bit apprehensive to visit India.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty intense.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's a lot of people and a lot of traffic and a lot of everything.
A lot of people are scared about the poverty, the poverty element, which I understand. Like it's confronting and it's hard to see, but it's also understanding that it's a billion people trying to survive in a country. And sometimes the people that you look upon and you think, oh, poor them. Like especially, I really recommend. I don't know if you've ever done it, but doing a slum tour. So in Mumbai, I went to Dharavi, which is one of the biggest slums in the world. And, you know, there's schooling, there's businesses, there's systems, there's community. Like they have a big influence on the political system in Mumbai. Like, you know, and yes, there definitely 100% could be better conditions. But those people are actually still choosing to live there.
Well, I haven't been to Dharavi, so I can't really comment on it. But in my city, there is a slum area too. And it's like through our roads, so I used to pass there a lot. And it is fascinating how everything just gets there, you know what I mean? And we grew up with that. Like, we just know what is going on there and what is going on everywhere. And it's really hard for us, like for me to explain if you don't see it. So, I mean, I'm not sure how the people living in Dharavi would, as a foreigner coming into their house, or even people like us who are not living in their slums, going into their house, it's just slightly different. So I've not experienced any of that. Like I not go to slum or I haven't done. We obviously pass through because the roads go through them. It's very, very up. Like, I don't know what the word I should use. Up, like it's very upfronting for me to go and see them like that. Like, so I while growing up, I was thinking I can't do anything about it. You know what I mean? So it is just how it is in India, and people grow out of it. People just don't grow out of it. So it's like billion people trying to do everything they can. And there is someone who's like, it's like survival of the fittest. The person who's the best will come out of the best, worst, you know?
Yes.
And we experience, like while growing up, we experience that every day, even if we are not living in slums.
Well, the education is very competitive in India, isn't it?
Yeah, oh my God. We just thrown into the deep end really fast. And you get exams after exams. You get three exams a year. And from the grade two, we start getting exams and, you know, pressure situation and you got to pass it. But you know what? That makes everybody, like, that makes us, like, I can talk about myself, good in maths.
Yes.
Because we've been pressured to do everything. but that's not the right, like, now I'm coming to Australia, I realize that, you know what? Could have been better. You know what I mean?
I just think a little less pressure for the children. I know some kids, they're like 14 and 13 and they're saying, oh, I have to do well in my exams and I have to choose the subject now for my university. And I'm like, no, sweetheart, you know, no, you have to be a kid, you know, like do good. I think you should study and concentrate. Mm. But they also need time to play and to relax and enjoy because we have years of work ahead of us. You know, the poor little things. I feel no wonder you guys love coming on exchange to Australia. It's like a break.
Well, that's why there's a trend. We spoke earlier that I'm staying in Australia. Remember? I mean, I came for higher studies and it was like it's a norm for a lot of Indians to just go out and study. Because it's so much pressurized situation and all the top level schools are, you know, it's only a little bit like you get all the best schools. You only have a little bit of people can get in because there's only limited amount of seats available. So all of the people who are not at the top like me, who has to think about, oh, you can't study there because you can't get into the best schools, but you can study to like US or UK or Australia, you can come in and, you know, you can take the loan and study loan and come here and, you know, study and prepay the loan back and you can still be good, you know?
Yeah.
And that's why it's been trend from India to visit, like, come, like, that's what they call it, higher studies. But it's not really, like, we're not going for something really fancy. We are just doing a master's or, you know, like, I'm not going for a PhD. Then I came to Australia. I'm just doing a master's. And master's, to do that in India, it's also available. But to get to a best university or best school in India, business
so
school.
So competitive.
Really hard. Yeah, it's very competitive.
And I love that they're valuing education. And, I mean, Kerala particularly, there's something like a 98% literacy rate.
It's
done really
well. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah.
Well, down there. I mean, that's better than, I think that's better than Australia. That's Kerala runs like their own country, very much so.
Yeah, I don't remember how it is. I can't really comment on
that. They've handled COVID really well and things like that.
Yeah.
They have a very big focus on health and there's quite like feminist sort of. Females have quite a lot of rights there and things like that. It's quite a progressive state in India, so it's quite interesting. But tell me, so because when you go back, do you actually get some time to travel?
No, not really, not at all. So pretty much, like if I go back, it'll be like two to three weeks from max. And as I said, I've only been there once in the last 3-4 years. And normally, so when I went, it was marriage season. So I would go for like a couple of marriages and then we have to see my friends, school friends, college friends. And that's about it. Then you just don't have time. I mean, now I've decided after we had a chat, I'm like, I'm going to make a list and I'm going to go everywhere. So
I loved that. And it was so cool, Anuj, that you sent me that. I mean, I might even have to share, if you're up for it, share what you put together, because I shared it with a few of my Indian friends, actually, even in the tourism industry, and they're like, okay, I'm going to do mine too. So making their list. Yeah. But, you know, it's funny, you and your dad put together a list of all these places across India that you visited.
Yeah.
And I came along and added a few and cross-checked where I've been too. So, there is a lot to see.
Yeah, and I'm sure we missed out a lot of it, which we don't know. We have to ask the locals over there. So I try my best to put everything together, and obviously my dad helped a lot.
It's awesome. Thank you for doing that.
So I'm hoping that, you know, I used to have that thing that I want to do 40 countries by 40. But I think after chatting to you, think about like, yeah, I can still do 40 at 40, but I want to do a lot of India too, because I've missed out on a lot of wildlife. I've missed out on a lot of East India. A lot of North part of India is missing. Like overall, generally, I'm missing a lot of pockets. And plus, I've traveled with my dad and my parents is when I was in school. So I hardly remember. And back in the days, the photos were not digital photos. So I don't even know where my photos are. I mean, I'm trying to find. So I actually don't remember a lot of it.
And it's interesting because when I like talk to you, you know, you were surprised by how much I've seen. And when I go there, people say, oh, you know, where have you been in India? Thinking I'm going to say like, you know, Delhi, Jaipur, Agra, Goa, and then I'm done. Yeah. And I sort of, when they ask me, I'm like, oh, okay. And then I tell them all the places and they're like, what? They're like, I don't even know those places in India. And I'm like I was in Meghalaya, which is, and the reason we went there is we watched the wonderful episode of Human Planet, and there's an episode on river people, and they did this area, Cherrapunji, Meghalaya, and it's a river. There's a lot of rivers, a lot of mountainy area, but it's got the biggest rainfall, one of the biggest rainfalls in the world. And in the monsoon season, they literally can't cross into there around their town. So they built these tree bridges, and they've been training these trees for hundreds and hundreds of years. Some of these bridges are 500 years old, and then they've passed it down through the generations, and they're still creating new tree bridges. And they had one of the only double-decker tree bridges in the world. And my husband and I were watching it, and he was like, okay, now I want to go to India. And that was, we had to go there. So I was there taking pictures and things, and my friends are like, where is that? And I'm like, yeah, it's in India. It's like your country. And they're like, what? And then I went to the tigers in central India, and I saw 12 tigers on 8 safaris, and they're like, what? I went to Ranthambore for 8 safaris and I saw nothing. And I'm like, I went to 4 parks and we saw all these amazing tigers. And then I'll be in, you know, in Munna, in Kerala, and the tea plantations. And some of my friends, they've not even been there. It's like, tea is India. You have to get to the tea plantations. Come on, you know. So it's really interesting to hear. But you were saying before, like, as an Indian person, when you go, you want to go outside for travel.
Yeah, and that's very normal for Indians as well. So, like, Indian with a bit of money will not go anywhere in India. That's my perception. And they will go to Europe and America, like North America, all those places, because this is back in the days when I was growing up. Like, you want to see something, and this is completely my perception, right? So you want to see something better than what you are in. Right. Now coming to Australia and living here, now I've started appreciating how amazing India is. And you got everything. So if I want to, like, if you imagine that, right, India has wildlife, India has snow, India has beach, India has island beaches, India has like crazy river system. This is just nature.
Yes.
Forget about history, and that's a different topic. Like, and so for all, if you want to do that, you've got to go to Africa, then you go to South America, then you've got to go, you know, to Europe for snow. You know, there's so many, and this all in one place, which is smaller than all of them, you know.
Yeah.
And I've started sort of realizing that, look, I missed out a lot when I was growing up. Like, I have been in a lot of places in India, don't get me wrong. My parents took me everywhere, and so I got the travel bug. Now I'm looking at the list, and I'm like, I have not done much. Not been to places that matters. You know, like in India, you have tiger safari as well as lion safari. There's no country in the world has both. You know.
Yeah.
And you can just do it in 2 weeks' time. You know what I mean? You can go to lion and then tiger, and you probably see one of them.
Absolutely. Leopards, you have elephant, you have rhino.
Yeah, everything. And so we don't have to go to Africa. You know what I mean? It's there. The lion safari is just around the corner from where I grew up. Like, it's not exactly around the corner, but, you know, it's like drivable distance, right? Like, absolutely, 8 hours or something. Or a train ride away, right?
Yes.
So, but we never, like, we didn't think about that. All we think about it is, oh, we need to go to Africa to see lions, but they are there. Or, you know, and there is culture, it's amazing, like caves and cave systems. And then obviously Taj Mahal and all this northern part of India has all this Mughal history, this unbelievable part. Like if there are temples, they are South Indian temples. They are like, I don't know, one of the temple could be 1,000 years old. You never know. Like, and
In Madurai, I went to the Meenakshi temple, and it was actually just before one of the festivals. And completely different. The colors and the ceremonies going on and the just the artwork that's in there and the people going to worship. It was just like this. Everyone was there. It was amazing. Yeah. And people keep going to visit, you know. But, you know, I think people in Australia are the same, you know. Like I got to 2012 was a big year of travel for me, I think. But I also went, you know what, I've seen the Taj Mahal, I've seen the Eiffel Tower, I've seen the Statue of Liberty. I haven't seen Uluru. I hadn't seen the Great Barrier Reef. I hadn't been to Tasmania. And so that year I made the rule I had to go to every state, which I have now done. So, so I think the nice thing that's happening, you know, even though it's terrible with the COVID, is that people are traveling in their own country if they can at the moment. So that's a nice thing to see. It's very hard with people like us who have family and friends overseas. We would love to go back and see them. But you stop and you make an appreciation and go, okay, what have I been doing in the past and what do I want to do more of? And I know that you talked to Amanda Kendall from the Thoughtful Traveler podcast about the slow travel. So maybe the trip, like you're saying about going to all these different places, I was in India for 2 months in 2012, and that's when I went skiing. I was at a wedding in Delhi. I was at a conference in Mumbai. Then I'm in Goa. Then I was in Kerala. Then I was in, so I'm in the beaches. I'm in the snow. Then I'm in the desert. I did a 10-day silent meditation, if you can believe it, in Jodhpur, you know, so in the desert in Rajasthan. And I just saw I went down to Chennai and I went to Madurai to, you know, and I got to experience the South culture and the temples. And in this one trip, I mean, it was 2 months. I had a lot of time, but I did. I really got to see north, south, east, west, and not so much, when you say west, I need to get to Kolkata. I haven't been to Kolkata. I really need to get over that side. But I went to Dharamshala. I saw the Dalai Lama on that trip. You know, like it's phenomenal. And this is all, I stayed within the country the whole time.
Yeah. And you still have probably a lot to go by the
looks of it. I do. As you said, that going and doing the lions and the elephants and the rhinos, because there's safari in the south, there's safari in the east, and there was a safari, I guess,
in the west
and
west
central.
Everywhere. So you got a safari, I think 5 different tiger parks, and then you got rhino ones, and then the lion ones. Then obviously south is elephant and all those other.
And then you've got the deers and the birds, like they're very. That's phenomenal. Look at all the eagles and kites. They're very spectacular.
Yeah, I know. It's all everywhere. Like you go there and it's there. And I've just realized that, look, I don't have to go a lot of places. Like I mean, I'm going to still travel overseas, like not India as well. But whenever I'm going to go to India to meet my parents and stuff, I will make sure that I'll do 1 week somewhere.
Different place,
yeah, because otherwise I will not see everything which I should appreciate more. And I appreciate it a lot more. Like I started talking to a friend of mine who's in the same boat as me. He lives in India, but he hasn't gone anywhere. And we've decided that we're going to do one. So this list is shared with him.
Yes.
And we're going to do one at a time. Every time I go, and we have like, hopefully we have a life, long life. So we have like 30 more years and we can go there 15 more times. And, and we can do a lot of places. So I think I'm not going to miss that.
And so if someone's going for the first time, this is a big question, but where do you think they should go for the first time?
Well, for me, if somebody goes to India for the first time, you got to visit Taj Mahal. Like there is no other way
to
go anywhere else other than that. And probably maybe do a Kerala or, you know, and Rajasthan if they have a culture, if they want some cultural stuff.
Yeah, and Rajasthan, we should say, is like, it's what you think of India. So like those shapes, like the Mughal shapes, which are the sort of the shape of the Taj Mahal, all those beautiful windows and intricate design, the bright colors of the saris and the dress. A lot of that comes from Rajasthan. And it's where the kings, so there were kings all over India, but still the predominant amount, there still are kings in that part. So the palaces and that sort of thing.
Yeah. You get a lot of the palaces are now hotels, so you can live in one of those palaces.
Yeah, the Udaipur City Palace is my, Udaipur is one of my favorite places in the world.
Oh, wow.
I love it. And I was very fortunate I met the king.
Yeah, we won't get that.
So my first trip to India was with my father in 2005.
Yeah.
And we were going for a conference. And they told the organizers, they said to the hotel, you know, this businessman's coming, he's bringing his daughter, you must take care of her. So Atiti Devo Bhava, so I was God. And I, you know, wherever I went, somebody would escort me in the hotel. Or if I wanted to go shopping, they would send the car. You know, I was 17. I'd never experienced anything like this. And this is just hospitality. That's not just a palace, I've now learned. But everyone was so interested to meet me and so welcoming. And, you know, I told them I wanted to ride an elephant.
Oh,
I said, it's India. You know, elephants are here. And they said, yes, but in Rajasthan, there's not really an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, I really want to see an elephant, though. And they said, okay, well, sometimes for weddings, we have an elephant.
Mm-hmm.
And they use the haldar, but really big weddings. So they said, there's not many. They said, we can get you a camel. I said, you know, I've seen camels. So I really want to see an elephant. And okay, don't worry about it. They came back to me that afternoon. And they said, madam, tomorrow we'll meet you at 10 and you will ride the elephant. So they organized it this day. So I said, okay, great. You know, me just thinking, this just, you know, there's elephants everywhere. And that sounds silly, but in Ahmedabad, I was in my friend's apartment and I heard some bells. I heard some noise. I looked out the window and the local elephant was going for a walk down the street. So
in my city, you were
in
there.
Your city, I saw.
In my city, you get elephants. Like, there's elephants all around. Like, when I was growing up, you'll see them all around. Yeah.
Just going for a walk, you know, down the market. He's just walking down the street.
Yeah.
So it's not unreasonable that I thought there'd be an elephant.
True. In my city, like Ahmedabad, you will see elephants. I don't know what they are for. I never asked.
So, next time you can ask.
Yeah, I think I'm going to ask that. there is a lot. I mean, we get lots of dogs, elephants, camels, everything. Yeah.
So, but in Rajasthan, not so much. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
because of the weather,
Yes. So they came to me at 10 and the hotel, you know, assistant, he took me and we walked through the Udaipur City Palace. We walked through the gates. Then we were into the private area, the king's area. So we walked through another section. And then they opened the gates and there was my elephant. They brought the elephant to the palace for me to ride. And then I rode the elephant around the king's garden.
Wow.
This is why I love India.
Wow.
So
get that.
I can't promise maybe everybody has that. But
maybe there should be someone who should start a travel agency to do that kind of an experience.
Just to wow the Westerners and make them tell. Yeah. You know, it worked for me because I've been now 11 times. So people ask me why I love India because I ask for an elephant and I get an elephant.
Wow.
So that was pretty special. And I just, the day we had to leave the palace, I cried. I was so blown away by, I couldn't believe how nice and welcoming and wonderful these people had been to me. Everyone wanted to have us for lunch. We were going to Delhi. there were quite a few of the businessmen were there. Everyone wanted to have us in their home for lunch or for dinner. One man was extra sort of forceful with his invitation, so we accepted and we went to see him. He happened to end up owning one of the largest properties in Delhi, a farmhouse. He also owned a factory. And so I went to a real – they make clothes for Marks & Spencer. And then I became family friends with them, and I ended up going back and visiting, went to the daughter's wedding, you know. So, and then on my most recent trip, you know, we talked about wedding season before. We should tell people. So why is wedding season? It's like December to February. Why is that?
I don't know what is it. It's the good in our sort of religion. I don't know if it's true or not, but in our religion, there is this bad timing and the good timing.
Auspicious so timing.
Auspicious. Yeah, that's the word. Auspicious timing. Yeah. and that's why you got to do before, like sometime in December.
Yes.
And so it's very interesting because if you are northern part of India, you can do it in a different time than you are in south, southern than us. Like south from Gujarat down is different. And obviously South India, like the Keralas in there, I don't know about them. What I can speak about is us. And we have this bad, like bad, non-auspicious timing, and they are between like 15th December and 15th January. So all the wedding are out of, so all the local weddings like are around that. But for the people like me who are not living in India, who doesn't care about auspicious timing, we just go in the middle time.
Yes.
We have between 15th December to 15th January 1st, because we can all get leaves and go to India. Second is amazing weather in my city during that time. So my city is 40 degrees plus, I mean 40 degrees centigrade plus every day for like 8 months or so.
Yes.
I think April to like September, something like crazy. And you get few months, like 2 months of good, you know, decent weather.
It's and cooler and not humid. It's just dry season.
Just really good season. I mean, perfect, like mid-20s, daytime, like teens in the nighttime, don't get very cold. So that's the best time. And you guaranteed no rain. So because in India, rain is very seasonal for where I live.
It's wet and dry more than...
Yeah, wet and dry. And you have summer's rain. So it's only summer rain and winter. That's it, nothing else. I mean, summer is very long. So that's the season. And that's the... So it sort of collides with this auspicious timing. And then there's a couple of festivals in January. I mean, there's one festival in January called Uttrayan, which is kite flying festival. Mm. It's celebrated in the western part of India a lot more than elsewhere. And so my, like when somebody's getting married in India, I would go and have that wedding and then celebrate Uttrayan. It is one of my favorite festivals, kite flying festivals, and come back, and it's the best timing, you know, like after 15th of January, and then everybody's getting back to work now in Australia. So it's I think that's why this season has started, and a lot of people, like my brother-in-law, got married in April. So it's not that there's no wedding; it's just not a great time to have wedding. And people from, and in India, almost every family have somebody overseas, right?
Yeah.
If they are middle class, then there will be somebody or your friend or someone close by who's overseas. So for my brother-in-law, we are overseas and we couldn't make it on December. So he was so nice. So he moved his wedding in the peak summer, April.
Wow.
And we went there in April at 40 degrees and it was fun.
Oh my God. It's so hot. And you're wearing, like, you know, a lot of garments for the weddings. Yeah. You're wearing the big, you know, women are wearing saris or lehenga or anarkali. Men are wearing the suit, and it's, well, they wear a suit or they wear the pajama style suit, the kurta. So you've got all these big outfit on. So that's why you want the cooler weather too. But, you know, it's something that I've talked to my colleague about, because actually I think I mentioned to you maybe that I'm working with Take Me to India, which is a travel company. And so when we said we should really try and arrange that when we take tours, because a lot of the tours we arrange also are November to Feb, it's a good time for travel too, for the weather. And so I said we should include a wedding. Like, how do we ask people, can we take the Westerners to the wedding? Because it's once in a lifetime. Because I went for my friend wedding. No, it wasn't my friend's wedding. I forgot. I was packing. And then I was like, I always take a couple of nice garments. I have a cupboard full of garments. And I went, I'll take a few nice outfits. I nearly took one bigger one. I thought, no, that's silly. What am I going to go to? And then a day I got there, I forgot my friend, the good family friend, it was her husband's cousin's wedding. So she had invited me. She said, oh, if you're in Delhi, you know, like that's the night of the wedding, you should come. It was ended up being sometimes 4 days of wedding. So this was the Sangeet night. So it's sort of, it's a party night. Anyway, she asked me, oh, what are you doing here? You know, you're still coming tonight and, who are you here with? I said, oh, I'm here on a tour. I'm taking three women around India. She said, well, bring them. You know, and it's just like that. Just bring them. And so I said, I didn't tell them because I thought it might happen, but I did wanted to just make sure it would definitely happen. So I said, okay, I have a surprise. We're going to a wedding tonight, an Indian wedding, but we have to go shopping right now. So we took all around Delhi, go trying to find outfits. I actually ended up lending them all my garments and we went to this function. But they and I just said, yeah. We should. I think my mic's going bad. Let me just check. Okay, we're good. So I said, definitely we should arrange that we start taking people, wedding tourism, which I think is a thing.
I don't know, but it would be amazing for the tour people to see the weddings. Because I actually, honestly speaking, I didn't go to India for a long time. In between years when I was here, before I started earning a lot and I finished the uni. So I actually, one of my friend owns a wedding venue in my city. He's very well known. So I actually called, I actually told him up one day, look, I'm coming. I need to go to a wedding. is there anything scheduled at your place? And he's like, yeah, we got 10 weddings within December. You come around, it's fine. It was going to be this year. It didn't happen, obviously. But next time, I just love it. The food is
unreal. The food. You get to have every type of, if you wanted to taste the foods, then that sort of food, that function, you get to try all the foods. And I think people as well, they don't think that, in your state is different. Gujarat is predominantly a dry state. But if you go to weddings, if you go to weddings in other places, people think that Indians don't drink. You go to an Indian wedding in anywhere but Gujarat, my God, they drink. They will drink you, and because of the hospitality, because you're the guest, they will offer you more drinks. And because they know also in Western culture that we do drink more. It's very, my girlfriends learned that quickly. I was like, pace yourselves. And, the next day was tough.
And in India, I think, I don't know whether this is correct or not, but in India, a lot of, they drink a lot of whiskey style drinks. So, you know, in India, we get wine, spirit, gin, all these different fancy. I'm sure it is fancy now over there, but when I was going, it's just very plain. And if you go to a smaller wedding, you'll be very same sort of drinks. And it will be it's very strong. And you have few, and then there is a problem, you know?
Yeah, so, whiskey and beer. Yeah, that's the Kingfisher.
Yeah.
And but we liked the rum, the Old Monk.
Oh, Old Monk, yeah.
It's oh, a my God.
I should send you an episode of a podcast that I hear. There's an Old Monk story where it comes from.
Oh.
So it'll be a good listen for you. Yeah, it's actually Britisher who owned the land and they started doing over there. It's pretty interesting how it is. And now it's one of the most famous rums in India, actually. At least.
Yeah, well, we enjoyed it and we got onto it. One of my girlfriends, she quite liked it. It was easy to find and we'd had it with my friends in Bombay. But then my husband and I, we had heard in Kerala you can't get as much alcohol, which there are ways, but Kerala, they try to reduce the amount of alcohol sold and it's quite, there's limitations put on. So in hotels and things, it's usually fine, but just the liquor stores sometimes you can't get. So we were going down there and so we sort of thought, okay, we'll go and buy a bottle. And so we took a bottle of Old Monk, but the glass is very thin and we took the glass bottle in our suitcase. Well, in my husband's suitcase. And so I don't think he likes Old Monk anymore because all of his clothes ended up smelling like it.
Rum, yeah.
Dark rum through a suitcase is not a good idea. And they also gave it to us in a cloth bag, not in a plastic bag. So it went everywhere. So top tip, if you're buying alcohol, maybe don't wrap it properly or don't buy thin bottled dark rum and put it in your suitcase. That's my tip. So just we better wrap up, but my gosh, there's so many wonderful tips I'm going to put into the show notes because you answered all my beautiful questions. But if you could give people a couple of tips for the first time to India, what would they be?
So I would say for the first timers to India, just have an open mind because there is a lot happening at the same time. And if I say, like, try hot food, not cold, because there is a slightly different immunity level for everyone.
Okay, yeah.
And everybody has to set their expectations, right? So if you are going for a couple of weeks, you're just not going to get to all the stuff that we've talked about in the podcast. And if you are going by yourself, obviously you have to just be a bit more, you know, circumspect.
Yeah.
Maybe draw up a rough itinerary. Because there is lots and lots of train delays, plane delays. There's a lot of weird things that happen in India. So
I think I would say on that, basically you must go with a travel agent. Not your whole trip, but at least, you know, I've had like my young cousins and things, they want to do it quite cheap. But I say just the train tickets, train and plane tickets, really you should book them through a travel agent because the system is – even for Indians, I think is, yeah, it's very.
Oh, but every Indian has a friend who is expert at booking the.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I always have a friend. If you have to have a friend.
Yeah.
And I always, you know, whenever one of my, if someone I know is going, I'm like, please, I put them in touch with at least one, possibly five of my Indian friends.
Yeah.
So if you need anything, they will know somebody who knows somebody.
Oh, there'll be someone, everywhere. And just have an open mind. It'll be a lot to digest in 2 weeks if you're going for 2 weeks. If you're going longer, it'll be even more. So,
absolutely.
And it's a fascinating thing by itself. So, it is going to be a wild ride, but it's amazing.
It's absolutely incredible. India is, you know, their
catchphrase.
That's
what they call it,
And it's true. And I just want to share this one for Darius because you included for me a fun fact, and it's a fact that I love too, which is India has 75% of the world's tiger population in the wild.
Yes.
And they have done a phenomenal job. Like, you know, when I was there and I had some pictures and people saw us in the cars near to the tiger and they were like, ooh, you know, should you really be doing that? Well, the tiger has the right of way. So we are there, and if the tiger comes, then the tiger goes wherever they want. And if the tiger comes close to the car, we move away. And what the tourism has done for the tiger population is in India is phenomenal. So, you know, I think as long as they continue to manage it and continue to respect the nature, but actually what they're doing is they've found these tiger corridors. I'm going to have to do a whole episode on this, but because the tiger, going and seeing a tiger in the wild, I cried my eyes out. It's phenomenal. But they have actually moved entire villages because they've said this is where the tiger wants to go. Tiger gets right of way. And they've paid the community members and the villagers to move. And so then they have more space and they have this bigger land that they can go without having to be interacting with people. And then those people around that area, they've kind of like, oh, if we take care of the nature and if we take care of the tiger, more people come and they bring more money.
Yep, exactly.
So they're like, okay, we'll take care of the tigers then. You know, that's beautiful.
And don't forget, India is also only country where you have lion and tigers.
I just don't think of that. I think people think of, and they always think of the jungle, that there's lion and tiger, but they're not. Like not, in Africa, you don't have tigers.
Tigers. But in India, there is not in the same jungle, right? Let's just clarify that.
Yes. Otherwise, we're going to have very disappointed people going on safari going, so where's the lion hanging out with the, it's not like the Jungle Book, guys. I don't even think that. Actually, Jungle Book was written tiger, because of Indian jungle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tiger. It's tiger and it's Indian, all of them.
And Baloo?
Baloo is a, I think it's a sloth bear or something, right?
Yeah. It means Baloo. The Baloo is the bear. That's where his name came from.
Yeah. And you get all the, all the stuff in Jungle Book is pretty much Indian stuff. I think one of.
It was written around Pench. Yeah. In Pench, they have a statue of of Mowgli. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Because the guy who wrote it went to visit, and I think he did he was an expat or as a child he lived in India for some time.
And also, we may see cheetah back in India soon, so you never know if you get. The Supreme Court of India passed the legislation that they're going to reintroduce cheetah from Africa. Now it's going to happen. When, we don't know, but sometime in the future. So
stay tuned.
Stay tuned. It'll be fun. Yeah, wildlife is going to be amazing because India is obviously suitable, good, great weather for tiger, like a general cat population.
Yeah.
So it's great.
I'm so proud of them.
thank you so much.
The conservation in India, honestly, like people... Yeah. There are a lot of troubles. I think we can both, honestly say there's some troubles in India and there's a lot of societal issues and things in time, but their attitude to conservation
is unbelievable.
And what they've done for, India has brought more species back from extinction than any other culture, I believe.
Wow, and that's good.
If you kill a whale or a dolphin, you'll be tried as if you killed a human.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's good.
they take it really seriously. So
yeah, and I'm sure they have to. I think it's a general thing in India now, because when we were growing up, like as kids, it was sort of like historically the kings and all of them used to shoot lions and tigers and all those things, and we were told in the books. So all the mindset of my generation is like that. Like, no, we can't kill them. You know, they are very important. And that's probably because my generation is now older and now it's getting there. It is getting better and better. Yeah.
Well, it's basically my second home. If I could live there, I will make it happen one day. I promise I will live in India one day. It's my, I think in a past life, I was a Maharani, obviously.
Of course.
A warrior princess, I was a warrior queen. But I absolutely love India. Dhanyavad, Shukriya, thank you for being here today, Anoush. And I look forward to, this is the first of many India episodes because there's just, as we said, far too much to cover in one episode. Yes,
absolutely. And hopefully by the time I have been to India, maybe you can record one from there.
Yeah, maybe we'll be there together. Who knows?
Yeah.
Dhanyavad and Firu Malenge.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Already looking forward to the next one. We also have a rather extensive back catalogue for you to check out. But in the meantime, you can follow us on Instagram. That's at Lovely Travels on Instagram.
Or you can come and check us out on Facebook, Lovely Travels. That's LOVELLY. Or we would love for you to join our Facebook community with more than 500 members talking all things travel and adventure. That's the Lovely Travels community.
You can also visit our website, which is lovelytravels.com.
Or shoot us an email. We love hearing from our listeners. So please send us an email, feedback, comments, questions, whatever. info@lovelytravels.com.
And you can listen, review, subscribe, like, share, and promote our podcast in any shape, way, or form. We are on Spotify, iTunes, the internet, Google Podcasts. Everywhere where you get podcasts, you will find us.
All good podcasting locations. So that's tune in right. Next time, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you then.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.